Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, December 14th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's the holiday season. The baked goods have hit the shelves, the dinner tables, maybe your waistline. Here to help satisfy that sweet tooth is Chef Gail Sokol. Gail's first book about professional baking is one of the most widely used textbooks in colleges, universities, and culinary programs throughout the world. You know, some chefs, they get terrified by the baking. You say the word baking and they burst into tears. We've seen it on this program, right? Just play along. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We have a good baker in the house, and we'll bake some stuff. We'll talk food on a Food Friday coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Time for some dessert on Food Friday. And in the studio with recipes and tips for holiday baking is Gail Sokol. Her first book about professional baking is one of the most widely used textbooks in colleges, universities, and culinary programs throughout the world. Gail served as a member of the faculty of Schenectady County Community College in Schenectady, New York, for 18 years, teaching baking, nutrition, and sanitation. Gail has also served for 5 years as a faculty member in the nutrition department at the Sage Colleges in Troy, teaching food science and quantity foods. Her most recent book is Baking with Success, and it's a firecracker of a baking book, beautifully illustrated, and we'll be talking about things in that book today as we get you ready for the holidays. If you have a holiday baking question, we got an expert in-house. Gail Sokol is here. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gail Sokol, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's so nice to be back.
You have a project in mind.
I do.
Before we do that,
okay,
let's talk about some stuff going on with you. You're all over the internet. What happened?
Ooh, well, I love baking, and I love teaching baking and talking about it and showing people how to do it who say they can't do it. So
I know.
So we got some classes to get to.
Okay.
So I started putting YouTube videos out there, and then I started doing podcasts, and they are so much fun to do. And I just finished something like 54 podcasts. So my first season is done.
Wow.
And it's fabulous. And you can go right to my website, GailSokol.com. Also, it's called Baking Radio. So wherever you get podcasts, you can access it for free. I also am starting a new video series. I got my kitchen redone. I'm all ready for it.
And well, you know, that's brilliant because you pay to have your kitchen redone.
Yeah.
You write it off on the taxes.
Oh, I don't know about that.
You see, you got to get a good accountant. So this is great. You are now, you've done 54 podcasts.
Yeah.
Give me an example of a topic that might be in... Baking school? What's it called?
It's called Baking Radio.
Baking Radio.
And it can be anything. First of all, my first podcast was how I got started, in spite of the fact that my mom couldn't cook or bake. So I just sort of took to this. I was sort of born into baking ever since I could walk and talk. And then it goes into other subjects like, you know, maybe favorite tools, how to make a good cake, how to make a good yellow cake, how to make some chocolate cake layers, how to make frostings, buttercreams, marshmallows, ice cream. Anything. We talk about frozen desserts. We talk about fruit desserts. We talk about the magnificent mango, which is one of my favorite
fruits. Magnificent mango.
The magnificent mango.
What's magnificent about it?
I love sucking on the pit after I've gotten all the fruit.
Isn't that a health hazard? No?
No, it's delicious, and it makes fabulous sauces and desserts.
That is that's an interesting hobby, Gail Sokol. Our number here is 800-348-2551. I love this book. Because in addition to the beautiful sweets, and you're good at that, it has some amazing savory pastries in here.
Yeah, like
there's
some
onion
thing.
And leek bialys.
Yep. And
just
a puff pastry with pesto.
Oh yeah.
Pastry twist. Yep. Oh, it's fabulous. You can do baking whether it's savory or sweet. Both go together. It just people get scared of the word baking.
You know, I was joking about it. At the beginning of the show that chefs will burst into tears when you say baking, but it is a different thing.
It's different because let's say you're cooking and you're making a stir fry and you added one or two extra garlic cloves. OMG, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
It's still going to be okay. But in baking, if you say, well, I don't have flour, this is something my mom did. I don't have flour, so I can use baking powder, right? It's a white powder. I can use that instead of flour, and you can't for obvious reasons, which caused an explosion at one point.
In your house?
Yes.
During, oh, my God. You got to tell this
gravy.
Story.
Yeah. Right. Well, it was we were having Thanksgiving at my mom's house, and I love you, Mom. I love because she's probably listening, and I'm really scared now to see her
all
again.
Right.
Anyway.
It's okay, Mom.
So she was making gravy, and she did put baking powder in it. She thought it was flour. Or thought it was the equivalent to flour, and a big explosion ensued.
Ooh, ouch.
So that wasn't fun.
Well, that's impressive. Yeah. That's one way to, you know, just sort of say, well, Mom, I'll take the baking up from here. Good for you.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you have something that you are going to make. And
yes.
This is always good radio when we make something. Tell us what it is.
Okay, so I have made the base of a pavlova, which is a recipe from my book, Baking with Success. A pavlova is a meringue, and I made this earlier. And you put it in the oven and bake it for about an hour and 15 minutes. Basically, you're letting it dry out, and it's beautiful and white, and it gives you sort of a palette to build from. And now what I'm going to do with this is a great gluten-free dessert for the holidays because it's light. You've been eating a lot, right, through various different parties and things like that.
I'm a little disappointed you didn't bring the Easy Bake Oven for this.
I know. Well, this is a little too big to go in the Easy Bake Oven.
Okay, but, fine.
So this is about 9 inches in diameter, and it's called a pavlova after the Russian ballerina Pavlova, Anna Pavlova. Mm-hmm. And she was so light on her feet. So I put some whipped cream, whipped earlier. So you whip some whipped cream with just a little bit of confectioner's sugar and vanilla.
That looks delicious in
light.
Itself.
And you put it right on top of the meringue, and you just sort of swirl it around. And at this point, you can do whatever you want with it. So if it's summer, you can put berries on top. If it's winter, like it is now, clementines and pomegranate arils.
Oh, brilliant.
So I have some sliced clementines. I just put it on top.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
It's so pretty and colorful that it just makes the center of the table look spectacular.
Can I touch the meringue here?
Touch it. It's hard.
It's hard, but soft on the inside.
Soft and creamy on the inside, and then you got that creaminess and crunch, and I'm just going to sprinkle my pomegranate arils around.
Look at that.
All right, and then I have some ganache.
Which you've been keeping.
Which I've been trying to keep liquefied so it'll sort of drizzle over the top, and it's a little cool in here, Ray. So I'm sort of plopping the ganache on.
That's
there.
Fine.
It's fine, right?
Believe me, that phrase has been used many a time. You know, plopping the ganache on.
And then I like to top it with some nuts, and here because of the color, I chose some chopped toasted pistachios.
Oh, brilliant!
All right,
brilliant.
And it's just so beautiful and light. And again, you can use whatever you want. It is gluten-free and it's easy dessert. May I cut you a slice?
You may cut me a very small slice. I know the people in the front office are already irritated that they haven't had some yet. So make sure that there's enough for everybody in the front office.
They will get some.
By the way, while Gail Sokol is cutting the ganache and the
Pavlova,
the number here is 800-348-2551. That looks beautiful. And by the way, this recipe is online at WAMC.org. Now, do you... will you do this in your podcast?
Oh, yes. I talk about everything.
It's in the book, right?
It's in this specific recipe is in my book. But on the podcast, I also talk about subjects. So I may talk about the different types of meringues. And this is known, a pavlova is known as a French meringue.
Mm-hmm.
So I have discussed the three different meringues, let's say, on a podcast titled Meringues. And there's a French meringue. There is... a Swiss meringue, and there's an Italian meringue, which is the most stable meringue.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk about all different aspects and what you do with each one. But this is a very easy application to do it with. Anybody can do it, even you.
Doubtful. Now, if you want to see this, you can go to WAMC.org and look at our webcam. Let's take one call before we take our first break, and then we'll get into the calls in earnest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gail Sokol is our guest. Elizabeth and Holyoke, you've been waiting a while. You're on.
Great. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 13-year-old niece that who's gradually gotten interested in the idea of baking, and I'm looking for ideas and suggestions of what kinds of things would you start a 13-year-old out if you got a collection of three or four things that she could go back to and potentially use you know, maybe at least one or two of them for years to come, but something to kind of get her engaged and exciting.
And not burn the house down. That's the other option.
Not burn the house down. Well,
yeah. I don't think that will happen.
No, oh, good.
But she's done like cookies and some brownies and some initial things on her own. But something to kind of potentially get her going, like with her grandfather, and something she can sort of maybe create some traditions out of.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. What a nice aunt you are. You are wonderful. I also have taught a baking program at Schenectady County Community College for about 18 years as well. And I love baking with kids. Kids are amazing. And this is when it starts, whether you love it or you hate it. But you'll always have to eat. So this is a great thing for you. You know what? If you want to spend the bucks, my first thing, and I've told many kids this, ask for an electric mixer. It's a high-end gift.
Whoa.
So yeah, I know. But you can also do a hand mixer. So if she doesn't have a handheld mixer, they're very inexpensive. You can get some good ones. She does have that. Okay. So I never had an electric mixer when I was a kid. I remember creaming with a spoon. So she's way better off than I was. What about some essential tools? Good mixing bowls.
Yeah.
Baking sheets.
Okay.
Two 9-inch cake pans. A 9x13-inch, maybe a rectangular brownie or cake pan. Something that, these are things she'll have forever. And a good whisk, rubber spatula, an offset spatula, maybe a pastry bag set. Don't get me started. I could keep going and going.
Okay, we have to take a break here, Elizabeth. Go ahead. You can follow up really quickly.
I was wondering about something like a pastry bag,
Pastry bag and pastry tips make an amazing gift.
All right, Elizabeth, we'll have to take a break now. And, when we get back, I'd like to know the difference between a good whisk and a bad whisk. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll take a break and be back. Food Friday on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Gail Sokol is our guest. We talk holiday baking on the program today, or any kind of baking. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. The pavlova. Is that what it's called?
Yes, you are correct. Very good.
It's beautiful. It is so delicious and light.
Thank you.
Again, that recipe is on our website, and I guess you could find it at Baking Radio.
Yes, you could.
And you've done 54 of those so far?
I've done 54 podcasts.
How long did it take you to do 54?
Oh, long time.
Yeah?
Long time, yeah, because I write them, I research them, and I use a lot of my books for research, about professional baking, because it's such a good resource. Yeah.
And you can find that by just searching Baking Radio, or go to GailSokol.com, and that's GailSokol.com. And Gail is our guest today. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Emily in Plainfield. Emily, you're on.
Thanks. I had a question about some cookies that I make every year for holiday gifts. They're ginger cookies, and they're mostly they're flour and molasses and butter and sugar and spices and a little orange juice. And once I and baking soda. And once I bake them, if I bake them in advance, I wonder, if I'm not going to give them for a couple of weeks, should I freeze them? But I recently heard ginger cookies sometimes get better if you just store them in a cool place without freezing them. So I had some I made last week, and they're in my basement in a dry room in tins where it's not even 50 degrees. And I wondered if you thought it would be better to freeze them if I'm not going to give them for a week or so, or just store them like that.
You know what? That's a great question. And anything with molasses, brown sugar, these are known as hygroscopic sugars, and they will absorb moisture from the air. So they're always, I bet they're chewy, right?
No, they're crisp.
They're crisp?
They come out crisp, and they're still crisp, yeah.
Okay, because most of the time, anything with molasses or brown sugar will tend to get chewy, and that is what could happen if you leave them out too long. But what you want to do is, have you tried them after a week? Experiment, because...
No, I did try them after a week, and they're nice and crisp, and they always taste better the second day. The day you make them, you can't resist tasting them, but they always taste better the next day.
And it's because of those spices getting to sort of get jiggy with each other, and they sort of meld together, which is nice.
Did you just say get jiggy with each other?
I said get jiggy.
All right.
Okay. I did.
So I did time today and they're good, but they're going to not get given till like some of them till Christmas. So I'm so it sounds like maybe I want to freeze them if I want to keep them crisp.
Yes. So if you if they are a crisp cookie, and you would freeze them in an airtight container, separated by layers with wax paper, airtight, and then when you take them out of the freezer, let them come to, you know, room temperature to thaw them. And then sometimes if you want to get that just baked flavor, put them back on a cookie sheet at a, in a low oven and just heat them up for about 5-10 minutes just to get that just baked flavor.
Huh. Well, I probably won't do that if I'm giving them, like, you know, people, I give them to people and they eat them over a week or so, whatever. But I like the idea of keeping them crisp, so I guess I will go back to plan A and freeze them.
Freeze them if it's going to be a few weeks, yeah.
Thanks, Emily.
Okay, thanks for the information.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. It's 800-348-2551. On this Food Friday, Gail Sokol is our guest. We talk baking today. And Joe in Mount Kisco. Joe, what? It's a lot of background noise there, Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Are you on the moon? Hello.
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead. You're on.
Yes, hi. I'm a cook, I would say, and I'm not really a baker. But lately, I've been getting involved in baking on purpose because I want to get better at it.
Good for you.
But I'm having issues, terrible issues with cake dough because it's super heavy and not spongy at all. It's all like, you know, a block of cheese, basically.
Oh. What type of cake are you making?
Cheesecake?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hello? All right. We may have lost you, Joe. Listen on the radio if possible. Oh, are you still there? It's one of those calls. Hey, Joe, I think we get the gist of the question.
I just need to know what type of cake you were making. So if you were making what's known as... Okay.
That's all right.
Okay.
So you want to try?
Yeah. Some cakes use what's known as the creaming method of mixing. This is one of another subject that I discuss in my podcast. So there's different methods of mixing. So you don't just throw the ingredients together. There is an order to things.
Really?
Really. You wouldn't know that because
you
don't bake.
You absolutely are correct about that.
So if you're using the creaming method, you would want softened butter and granulated sugar, and you want to aerate that butter, and you get air in there.
Let's see if we got Joe back here. Okay. Joe, are you there?
Just throw the ingredients together.
Joe, I'm here.
Turn the radio down, baby. Turn it down.
I did.
All okay. Right, go ahead.
All right, so I'm trying to make sponge cake or anything like that.
Okay.
Yesterday I was using a bundt cake form, and I started out. I had some pineapple that had been cut for a while. I didn't want it to go bad, so I pureed it all and used that as the base liquid for the batter, along with some flour and eggs and butter.
Okay.
And sugar, a little bit of sugar. So anyway, the whole thing came out. It tastes great, but the texture is horrible.
Well, you don't have any leavening agent in there. You didn't mention baking powder or baking soda.
I put in baking powder.
Okay.
Because from my understanding, if it has acid, you put in baking powder. If you don't have acid, you put in baking soda. At least that's what I...
Baking soda needs an acid in order to form a neutralization reaction and form carbon dioxide bubbles, which get stuck in the batter and help it rise. So that it's the opposite.
So I probably have that backwards.
Probably have it backwards.
Well, that explains it.
I don't. You know, that could explain it. Did you follow an actual recipe?
No.
Okay. You may want to, what I like to do is when I'm experimenting, and it sounds great what you did with the pineapple, that's cool. You want to get a recipe that you know is tried and true, like from a cookbook or from maybe, you know, an honorable website that you trust, like Martha Stewart, yeah. Ina Garten. Follow that, and then you can substitute something in, like put the pineapple puree in for something like an applesauce in another cake. So you would be, sort of combining apples with apples and not just free-forming it out there, because what you did was you probably made a very heavy cake, not enough leavening agent, and most recipes are balanced. They need to be balanced. There needs to be enough drying agents versus wet ingredients versus leavening ingredients, and maybe you just didn't have enough.
Yeah.
And your eggs might have been too many eggs.
I used about a tablespoon, a tablespoon of baking powder.
That might have been too much.
But, you know, I don't know. It's not the first time it's happened to me. I'm just, you know, but then again, I know that basically it's my fault because I'm baking like a cook. And I know that doesn't work.
You know what, though, Joe? I commend you for trying. It's fabulous. And like I said, if you go to a recipe, try a recipe that is actually a written recipe, that's a proven recipe, and then experiment and take out some ingredients that you want to swap out. Just make sure that they're the same type of ingredient.
You see, Joe, you're an artist, and Gail is a scientist. I think that's the difference between cooking and baking.
Yeah, probably.
Ray,
so.
I'm going to hang up right now before we ruin this conversation.
All right, buddy.
All right, good luck, Joe.
But it's true, though. I mean, you're a little more regimented about that recipe.
I think that, you know, like I said, recipes, they're formulas.
Yeah.
Basically, they're formulas. And you know that you need dry ingredients like flour and butter and, you know, flour and baking powder and sugar. And then you also have your fat, like your butter or your oil. And then you also have your leavening ingredients and then your flavoring ingredients. And you have to make sure they all balance. So if you remove one, you can substitute one for another, but you have to know how they can be substituted.
So when improvisation takes place, and perhaps Joe was improvising a bit too much.
He was improvising.
He was outside the changes. Yeah. You have to stay inside the core changes.
Right.
And I assume now that you are more experienced as a baker, you can try a few more things.
You can play outside the box a little bit. So, but you still have to follow the rules. So if you know that you want to go from, let's say, chocolate, you want to make chocolate chip cookies, but you want to add peanut butter, I will take out one of the sticks of butter from my chocolate chip cookies and add an equal amount of peanut butter. So I'll get that chocolate peanut butter. It's a fat. I'm substituting a fat for a fat.
But when Joe was using pineapple, right?
Yes.
And you said, well, try a recipe that calls for apples. But aren't pineapples a lot more acidy than apples?
Yes, but what he's doing is it's water-based ingredient. So I see pineapple puree as a water-based ingredient. So is applesauce or even, you know, a water-based ingredient. So he's trying to just throw in a liquid, any liquid that he has that he wants to use up.
Yeah.
And that might not have been the best way to do it.
Okay.
Although it can be done, he just has to find a recipe that it will fit into that mold.
It's Food Friday. Gail Sokol is our guest. Her website is gailsokol.com. You can find out all about the podcast, Baking Radio. Also, the book is Baking with Success. And let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Eric in Shelburne. Eric, you're on.
Hi, it's a great show. It's so fun to listen to these discussions. My question is about a pastry kind of bread cake that's commonly eaten in Italy around the holidays. It's called panettone. I don't know whether you know it or imported it. They sell it at, you know, specialty grocers and food retailers here in the United States. I've never seen anybody make one of these at home. It's kind of like the Italian version of a fruitcake, I guess you could say, sort of bread-like. I've never seen somebody make one at home, and I was wondering, and I haven't been able to find a recipe for one online, and I was wondering whether you've ever made one, know what they are, have any thoughts about those.
Okay, to be honest with you, panettone, and you, I love the way you said it so much better than me. You have a great accent. I call it panettone. Or panettone, and it means big bread in Italian. And it's a very tall, yeasted bread. It's not like a fruitcake. Fruitcakes do not have yeast in them traditionally. But then again,
right, it's not that sweet.
Exactly.
It has little bits of fruit in it. Yeah.
It has little bits of candied fruit. It can have raisins and currants, and it can have nuts in it. It can be used with, in Italy, what they do is they actually spread mascarpone cheese on it and have it with espresso. How's that for an Italian?
Yeah, very nice.
And very nice. Oh, but delicious. You can toast it. You could use it for, French toast, things like that. I have never made it myself. What you would need to do is you would probably bake it in something like a springform pan, a tall springform pan that you would make a cheesecake in, because you want to get that height. I'm sure you can find a recipe for it. Again, a lot of these manufacturers that make them, and they're very famous and well known this time of year, they make them. Sometimes they're like 8 inches high.
Yeah, they're boxy. It's like a
they're
box.
Very boxy.
It's sort of a brioche crust kind of thing.
Right. So it's
if you will, sort of, yeah.
Brioche and panettone are probably very similar. They have a lot of fat in the dough, and it's a yeasted dough, but it's a sweet dough. So take a look. Keep looking for one, I'm sure you'll find one. But that's what it is. It's a yeasted dough.
Eric, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We go to Gail in Shushan. Gail.
Yeah, hi. I have made two fruitcakes, traditional fruitcakes, about 5 weeks ago. They're in a cool cupboard wrapped in several layers of cheesecloth that I've been brushing cognac on every week.
Nice.
Yum.
The original recipe only called for a half a cup of cognac, which I got two large fruitcakes with lots of nuts, and I didn't use I used all natural, like, dried cherries that I had soaked, and, you know, I used more contemporary dried fruits instead of the old grocery store stuff. And anyway, so I've sent one off to my mother and sister with the cheesecloth on it, but the one that I've saved for us is quite damp with cognac. And I'm wondering, should I unwrap it and wrap it in plastic? We're going to have it Christmas morning. So, I've been turning it over to hopefully rotate the...
You're all going to be crocked by lunchtime. Good for you.
I know. It has so much. Well, I've been crocked every day brushing this stuff on once a week. I went through an entire vial of cognac. It's quite good.
God bless you, Gail.
That is fabulous. So this fruitcake is loaded for bear. I mean, it's probably a little over-soaked.
Yeah.
All right. So you probably, it's a little too much cognac. I would maybe uncover it and just sort of pat it a little bit just to get some of the dampness off, because you don't want to form any mold or anything. And I don't think anything's going to grow in that because of the alcohol content. I don't think you have a problem. But if it is too wet and it's like mushy already, is it mushy?
Mm-hmm. No, it's holding its shape.
Okay.
You know, it's like a brick almost.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. So it might be very fabulous.
Oh, are you kidding me?
It's going to be very dense. Yeah. It had almost 2 pounds of pecans between the two cakes.
And that's what probably saved it. It saved it from getting too mushy with all that cognac. So, you may be fine. You might just want to increase the amount of cheesecloth around it to absorb some of that.
Okay.
And that's all I would do.
So I leave the old cheesecloth on and just put, I did buy some new cloth. I'll just wrap fresh cloth over the old.
I would do that, yeah. And just watch it and, I don't think anything's going to grow on it at this point. I think you're safe.
Well, my prediction is you'll get very good reviews
for
this, Gail.
You'll get very good reviews, Gail.
I don't know. It'll be a story, that's for sure. Well, thank you. I'm enjoying the show.
Sounds wonderful.
Thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. That's a lot of cognac.
That's a lot of cognac.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's go to Hannah in Newburgh. Hannah, you're on.
Hi. I have a sort of two-part question. First is, I'm pregnant and I've been craving pudding. And I tried to make it at home the other day for the first time, and it was good, but it had chunks of cornstarch.
Yep.
And I'm also going to be trying to make a lemon meringue pie for my husband's birthday, and that recipe, the lemon curd, calls for cornstarch. So any general lemon meringue pie tips, and then also how can we make pudding that's not chunky?
Okay. I have been there. I feel your pain because I have actually done this, Hannah. I actually made a lemon meringue pie where the custard never actually solidified, and the meringue was floating on it. And my kids used to call it the iceberg cake because it was, I said, we don't speak of that anymore.
Okay.
So yeah, I've been there. So cornstarch is a great thickening agent, and it will really when it comes to a full boil in that saucepan, you've got to stir it constantly. I don't know if you were stirring with a wooden spoon, a spoon, or a whisk. What were you stirring with?
A whisk.
Okay. And you got to make sure you get all the edges, all around the outside edges of your saucepan. And you want to make sure that cornstarch is thoroughly blended in with the sugar before you pour your lemon juice in and really keep it stirring. Because once that heat gets to it, it will start clumping up and solidifying. Now, the best fix I can give you is get a sieve. All right. Get a sieve and put it over a bowl. and pour your lemon meringue filling into that bowl and push through. And it will break up that cornstarch. Okay. All right. And then you will not tell anybody that you did that.
What, why? Okay. Is that cheating?
Well, no, you just don't want to admit that. You know, you had a few lumps. Everyone has a few lumps and bumps. You can also get some lemon, some egg that can coagulate as well. So putting it through a sieve can actually help that process as well. Now, the other thing is,
I would do that after it's cooked.
I would do it after it's cooked. So that, you know, you'll see that. But make sure you're stirring. Make sure you stir your dry ingredients with a whisk before. The sugar will help sort of declump that cornstarch.
Okay.
All right.
Hannah, when are you due?
April 6th.
Okay. Oh, well, you have a ways to go, but you should really have your feet up and your husband should be waiting on you.
I'll give him these tips so he can start making the pudding.
Fair enough. Well, thanks a lot. We have to take a break
here. Good luck.
800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Gail Sokol is here. We'll be back. It's a Food Friday, Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Our guest today is Gail Sokol. Her most recent book is Baking with Success, and you can find her at GailSokol.com, where you can see the baking, not see, but listen to the baking radio podcasts, and there are 54 of them. So start listening now, and you'll be going right through Christmas. A couple of emails here, Gail, and then we'll get back to the phones. This is from Chris in Hillsdale, and Chris's question. Well, thank you, Chris. You're doing my show prep for me. This is a good one. I'd like to hear the five baked goods a fledgling baker should know how to make.
Oh, that's a great question. I think the first thing is you want to make a good layer cake. So either a yellow layer cake, a chocolate layer cake, maybe both. Once you know how to make a good layer cake, you can put different flavorings in it and do anything you want with it. Then you want to make a good buttercream. So that's two. We're on two. Keep track.
All right, two.
So a good simple buttercream is very easy. It's not very, very hard. It's just softened butter or shortening. Butter tastes better. Lots of confectioner's sugar, maybe some flavorings like vanilla. And basically you want to be able to make a nice buttercream.
What's the ratio of butter to sugar?
It depends. It depends on how much you're making, but usually it can be quite a bit. It can be like a pound of 4 cups of confectioner's sugar to at least a couple sticks of butter, softened butter, and you want to use unsalted butter, and you want to add a little milk or some liquid in there. It could be anything, lemon juice, milk, anything.
Cognac?
It could be cognac,
okay.
Yeah. So that's two.
Okay.
Three, you want to make a good bread. Maybe start with pizza. So a good yeasted bread of some sort.
Okay.
Just to get familiar with yeast. All right. Four, get into your cookies. Try to get a good brownie. Try to get a good chocolate chip cookie. Get that down so you know how much you're baking. A lot of people overbake their cookies and they end up with burning them on the bottom or overbaking them and then they're too hard.
When you make chocolate chip cookies, butter or shortening?
I like butter.
I agree.
Butter is always better.
Right.
Always better.
They stay softer with the shortening, right?
They actually will stay cakier because shortening is a higher melting point.
Yeah.
So it'll take longer for that dough to actually melt down on the cookie sheet. Yeah. But you can sort of mess with this a little bit, Ray. So you can actually put your batter or your cookie dough in the fridge and get it harder, even if it has butter in it.
Ah.
And you sort of, you know, fake it out so that when it goes into the oven, it'll still stay a little bit higher.
You can
also use bread flour as well. Higher protein content will absorb more liquid, won't spread as much.
Do you do that?
Yes, I do.
Our guest, Gail Sokol. Now, that's four. You have layer cake,
buttercream,
yeasted bread, cookies or brownies. What's number five?
I'd say number five is a good quick bread. Scone, muffin.
Mm.
Be a muffin maker. Okay, people love muffins.
Yeah.
And if you make them, they will come.
Nice. You do donuts?
Yes, I do.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there's a great Zeppoli recipe in my Baking with Success. Yeah.
Oh, my.
With a salted caramel sauce with it.
Can you come on every week? All right, this one is from Judy, and the subject heading is Gifts for the Girl. A manual cookie press, says Judy. My grandma gave me one as my first baking equipment. We made so many delicious treats with it, and mine has lasted for 20-plus years. I strongly recommend the hand crank model as you have much more control.
Okay, so I'm not sure if she's talking about a spritz cookie press, because that you have to push dough through. That's what I'm thinking she's
doing. I don't know.
And or else there's also molds where you push the dough against it and then pull the mold away, and then you cut around the excess dough, and then you have a cookie.
Spritz press?
I think a spritz press is what she's talking about. Yeah, they're fabulous. Sometimes it's very hard. Some of the doughs are so hard you can't get them through the press.
It's making me uncomfortable. Let's go back to the phones. Heather in Salisbury, Connecticut. Heather, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a wonderful recipe for a classic French dessert, lemon tart, and you pre-bake the crust. I want to make it gluten-free with almond flour, if I can. The recipe calls for 2 cups of plain flour, 4 ounces of 4 ounces of butter, 2 tablespoonfuls of icing sugar, and 1 egg, and a teaspoonful of vanilla essence. Is there any way I can do almond flour, and will it hold together better than my usual attempts with almond flour?
Okay, so when you say that you have, it just uses all purpose for the 2 cups, right? You said flour, regular flour. So
2 cups plain flour, yeah.
Plain flour, mm-hmm. Meaning all purpose flour, okay.
Right.
So all purpose flour and anything from the wheat plant, and that is where all-purpose flour comes from, has gluten-forming proteins in it. And this is the problem. So almond flour does not. Almond flour is just ground up almonds. So what you want to do is, Heather, I would experiment a little bit. You can easily turn it into a gluten-free pastry. And you're baking it blind. That's what it means when you're baking it with either raw beans in it or pie weights. But I think what I would do is take out you may want to get a gluten-free flour first, like a Bob's Red Mill, and experiment that way, and then work your way up. Do like a half and half, like half all-purpose flour, half gluten-free, and then work your way up, and then supplement it with the almond flour and experiment. Yeah. I find when you do these different substitutions, sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And almond flour will give no structure to that cake, to that pie crust. But the one good thing about your pie crust, it has an egg in it. The egg is protein. The egg will get firm when it's heated, so it will have some structure. So you may have better luck with this particular type of dough.
Yeah. Does the icing sugar, confectioner's sugar, I guess they mean, does that have gluten in it?
No. No, it may have a little cornstarch in it to keep the granules of sugar separated, but no, it's just basically granulated sugar that's pulverized very fine.
Okay, fine. Now, the gentleman who was calling in about the panettone recipe, I have a book called How to Bake by Nick Malgieri, and he does absolutely every kind of baking.
Yes, he's fabulous.
And he has a recipe for Christmas bread, Italian Christmas bread, and he uses a 3-inch deep, 9-inch diameter springform pan.
Yes, that you have to do that. I had the honor of meeting Nick several years ago when my first book was honored. He's a lovely, lovely man.
Heather, thanks for the call. Gail Sokol is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. On this Food Friday, we go over to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim.
Yay, Ray.
How you doing?
All right.
Good.
Yes, I was wondering on the 3 types of meringue you mentioned earlier on the program, Gail, the French, Swiss, and Italian.
Yes.
What would be the differences between them, or could you just maybe just tell us how to make the Italian one?
Okay, so the difference is the French meringue usually has a 2-to-1 ratio of eggs to sugar, and basically is not really...
Two on the sugar and one on the eggs?
One part egg to 2 parts sugar.
Okay.
All right? And I use, for my pavlova, for instance, I used 4 egg whites. All right? And we're talking egg whites only, because meringues only use egg whites. 4 egg whites, and I used 1 cup of sugar.
Right.
All right. So basically, it's the 1-to-2. Now, that is not as stable as, now let's move on to the Swiss meringue. The Swiss meringue, the egg whites are warmed over a double boiler. You can take your electric mixer, just put them over double boiler and whisk as you go. And you want to reach about 160 degrees. 160 is the kill point for salmonella. So you do that with your sugar, and the sugar dissolves. So that's going to make a more stable meringue. And then you're going to beat the heck out of it with your electric mixer. and your whip and your whip attachment. Then you move on to the most stable meringue, the Italian meringue. This is where you make a sugar syrup, and you bring that to the softball stage about 235 degrees Fahrenheit, or until you see super like volcanic bubbles coming from the sugar syrup, and you whisk, you whip that into your egg whites as they're being beaten into your electric mixer, and that is the most stable meringue.
So you heat the sugar syrup to 235?
To about 235. And you want it to really be super, super viscous.
That sounds a little dangerous.
It is, but it makes a very, very, very stable meringue.
Would you pre-warm the whites before you mix the sugar syrup into them?
For any meringue, you always want your whites to be at room temperature because there's a natural surface tension in eggs. And you want to decrease that surface tension so that'll help force air into those egg whites because the larger they are, you know, the more volume you'll get.
Jim, thanks for the call. But it's a violent world, baking, whipping and
beating. We do lots of awful things to ingredients.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. I got to say, I've been nibbling on the pavlova for the entire program. It is just crazy good.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And the recipe, once again, is online at WAMC.org. Or you could find it in Baking with Success by Gail Sokol. And there may even be a podcast about that one. Yeah? No?
There's about the meringues.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's go to who's been waiting longest. Looks like Mary on the Mass Pike. Mary, go ahead. Hello.
Oh, hi. Well, your discussion is so sophisticated, I'm embarrassed with my question.
No.
No.
I love to make quick bread. You know, banana bread, date nut bread, all of those. Lately, I've been making a pumpkin bread with chocolate chips, bittersweet chocolate chips, and chopped pecan.
Mm. Yum.
Well, it's absolutely delicious. It's delicious. However, the baking never works out quite right. By the time the center is done, the ends are overdone.
Yep. Been there.
that happens with a lot of these breads, and I don't know what to do about it.
That's a common problem.
Covering the ends.
So what size pan are you putting it into? A loaf pan, like a 9x5x3 inch pan, or an 8x4?
Yes, a loaf pan.
A loaf pan. Okay. And how long does it normally say to bake these? Probably like 45 minutes to 50 minutes.
That's right.
And the temperature,
at 350. I even tried dropping the temperature a little longer.
And that's going to take longer. Let me ask you my famous question. Do you have do you ever open the oven?
Sometimes.
Oh, that's your problem.
That's bad?
Yeah, well, that's very bad.
Oh, I do
that
all the time.
So I have met so many people over my career that the first thing they'll say is, I always want to know if it's done. Do you have an oven window, like a window in your oven?
I do.
You do. So what I recommend is make sure your oven is preheated at least 15 to 20 minutes before you bake, and don't open that oven until the minimum temperature has been reached. So if the recipe says 45 to 50 minutes, wait 45 minutes. Do not open that oven. If you open the oven, you're going to lower your oven temperature, and it's going to really elongate that baking time because you've got such a deep pan with your quick bread in it.
Yeah, I end up usually I have to cut the center out because it's still kind of wet.
Yeah, so you're under baking, and this is has it ever come out properly?
It's always a little bit underbaked in the center.
Yeah, so there may be, you may be underbaking it overall, but you do open your oven occasionally, so I would make sure you don't open your oven at all.
All right. Well, Mary, thank you very much. We jump over quickly to Marlene in Queensbury.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I'm driving up towards where I live in Canada, and my wonderful Newfoundland grandmother used to make the best shortbread I ever tasted. And she always used some rice flour. And I've been having a great old time trying to find the rice flour. And I was just wondering if I could substitute cornstarch or, I don't know, is it traditional if you don't use the rice flour?
Traditionally, shortbread does not use rice flour, but you could, because rice flour doesn't have any gluten in it, you could substitute so many things, Marlene. I could talk to you about an hour about this. You could substitute almond flour or any type of nut flour that you want, like hazelnut flour, or you could grind your own nut, with a little bit of sugar from that shortbread recipe and make a really pulverized nut. That would make that shortbread spectacular.
Oh, great. Okay, well, I'm on the way home, and I'll think of you as I'm baking. Thanks
oh,
so much.
Have a safe drive. Thank you very much. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left here, and I think this one, Michael in Brimfield, has an important burning question that I've always wanted to know the answer to. Michael, go ahead. Hello?
What do you add to make devil's food instead of a chocolate cake?
Okay, so chocolate cake and devil's food cake are very, very closely similar.
But they are different?
They are different. So, devils are red. So there's a chemical reaction between cocoa powder and baking soda, natural cocoa powder. And if you add a little baking soda to cocoa powder, you'll get this it's not red, it's like a reddish hue.
Yeah.
You know, and then some people like to beef it up a little bit and add some red food coloring. Now, the new way to do this devil's food cake is to put some beet powder in it. B-E-E-T.
Beets.
Beet powder or pulverized beets. Yeah, people will actually do that. Have you ever tried that, Michael?
No.
Good plan.
A lot of people don't want to try it, but very little, just to give it a slightly reddish hue. That's the difference between devil's food cake and chocolate cake.
Thanks, Michael. I've never noticed devil's food cake that I've seen to have any red hue.
Just a tiny, tiny little bit.
All right. We only have about a minute here, but let's go to Steve in Belchertown. Steve, you've been waiting a while. You only have about 30 seconds for your question.
Okay, real quick. Can you just go over the process for soaking a fruit cake properly so that it's not too wet? I'm trying to make a British fruit cake, and my grandmother used to soak it with either bourbon or rum, and I just want to know how I go about that.
Okay, 30 seconds.
Okay, so normally you want to keep it in the pan that it baked in. Keep it in the pan, and you want to, and I know one of our previous callers was putting it with a pastry brush. She was just like brushing it. But you can actually pour it over. Some people might put little fork marks in it or poke it with a little skewer all over.
Okay.
If you don't want those marks in it, just pour it over and let it sit there in the sauce, literally the sauce.
For how long?
Do I have to worry about it pooling at the bottom of the pan?
It might, and that's how you know you have too many. Figure, when you water a plant, if you see the water on the bottom, you've overwatered it. So that's a good way to tell. But it will absorb over time.
Gail Sokol, we are done today. Once again, how do people find out about your website and podcasts?
They just go to my website, GailSokol.com.
And the
super easy
podcasts or Baking Radio.
Baking Radio.
Good luck with that. You'll probably famous by the next time you're on the show.
Oh, I hope so.
Support comes from Special Interest Tours, providing educational, specialized travel experiences, featuring the Alaska Northern Lights Tour with Strange Universe host Bob Berman, hot springs, dog sled rides, and more. SpecialInterestTours.com. Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront resort with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant and spa, now booking holiday corporate and private parties at more. ButtermilkFallsInn.com. And Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine at hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. Thanks again to Gail Sokol for being here. Thank you for listening. Great calls today, as always. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. Alan will be back on Monday for a Medical Monday. Stand by now for news.